the 19th and 20th of July, Lug Radio brings you the coolest conference of the year, with over 30 speakers and exhibitors from around the world.
Chris DeBona,
Max Spivak,
KDE,
Steve Lamb,
Matthew Garrett,
Bite Mark,
James Hooker,
Kevin Sandon,
Iculus,
Arby,
Hunter UK,
Daniel James,
Emma Jane Hopkins,
Open Rights Group,
Bruno Board,
Ben Phillips,
Rufus Pollock,
Minix Outlaws,
Sam Birchall,
John Carr,
Christine Shaller,
Edward Harvey,
64 Studio,
William Jogadin,
Rob McQueen,
Agostino Rissa,
Minix Emporium,
Robert Cohen,
Chris Hayes,
Benjamin Elko,
William Anderson,
Matthew Wilson.
Lug Radio Live UK 2008.
The Lighthouse Media Centre in Wolverhampton, England. Entrance is just £5 for both days. International visitors getting free.
Lugradio.org/live.
The Linux Tech Show!
The Linux Tech Show!
The Linux Tech Show!
All right.
Yay!
Let's get down to business.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 254. Today is Wednesday, July 16th. Welcome, everybody.
Hello, hello.
We got a full house tonight. With us is Randall Schwartz from Floss Weekly. Randall, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for inviting me on.
Thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure to have you on, sir.
So I guess the big question is, Randall, why are you on the show?
Well, I believe that I said some comments a few weeks back that take a bit out of context, and they created this interesting thread on your forum, and then I discovered the thread on the forum and thought it would be interesting to respond there, and then I also thought, well, maybe just actually interacting with me might speed things up a bit, although I've got to say in the last couple of days the forum thread has actually turned quite interesting and I think somewhat constructive, so we can talk about how that all came about.
I can go back, basically. I started the thread, and basically...
Pat badmouthed you.
Let me get to it.
I'm sorry.
Basically, I was talking about was different shows, print media. It seems they've been badmouthing Linux lately. And I guess clarifying that is my definition of what bashing and badmouthing is. I guess it's criticisms without real technical merit behind it. And I mentioned some of the Twitch shows on there. On a couple episodes later, after you made, I heard your comments on Twit, I mentioned you by name. So, from my perspective, listening to your comment, you were commenting. Like Leah was asking you whether or not you knew Hans Reiser, maybe talking about the Hans Reiser story, and then you came with your comment. I guess you could tell everybody what your comment was.
Well, I was commenting on. Do I know Hans Reiser? And then I said, no, this is recounting. Now, you actually have the quote on the forum. I'm not looking at that. So, but my recollection was something like, do you know Hans Reiser? And I said, no, I never met him. And then he said something about he wrote the Reiser file system. Now, in that moment, you have to realize that any comment I'm interjecting is a color comment. It's not anything to do with the actual flow. I'm trying to get some sort of, like, just perspective because I'm still interacting with Leo, who's sitting across the desk from me. And in that comment, I said, no, I'm not familiar, something like, I'm not familiar with RiserFS because I don't run Linux on anything important or anything meaningful. To me, those are the same words. Now, what I meant by that, which I obviously elaborated in the thread, is that I'm not running Linux on anything that I've got going on day to day. So I have no familiarity with Linux on an ongoing way. So I don't know much about RiserFS except that it's a file system. I don't know much about Hans Reiser except what I read in the Wired accounts about the trial. So that's the sort of offhandedness that the comment was. It was sort of a throwaway comment. And immediately, Leo went on to talk about the story. And so there really wasn't any more relevance to the fact that I did or didn't know anything about Linux, and I did or didn't know anything about Hans Reiser. And for, as I said in one of my comments on the thread, I said, it would have been inappropriate for me as a guest to then try to bring back up what I meant by that statement. It was a throwaway statement done in the heat of the moment, and we moved on.
So basically, it wasn't your regular environment. You weren't on Floss Weekly. You were on Twit, which is a roundtable-type discussion. Things go around pretty quickly. It's a live discussion, and things move on from one point to the next.
Absolutely, and Leo hosts it. Leo is actually the driving force. On Floss Weekly, it's more of a peer relationship where I drive a lot of the conversation, Leo drives a lot of the conversation, and we sort of have our nods back and forth on Skype when we want to sort of hand it back and forth so we're not both assaulting the guests, you know, with two different directions of thread, although we don't always do that. We're not as good at that as we should be. On Twit, this was Twit. I was just a guest. I was one of the five people, maybe four at that time, as part of the panel.
So, taken in the context of your statement, to me, it came off as a rather flippant comment. I perceived it in the wrong way that you intended it, and I apologize to you, Randall, for calling you a Linux basher. I was wrong in saying that.
Well, no, I completely understand where you're coming from, and thank you for the apology. I don't need that, but. I really do understand where you're coming from. If what you're listening for is, does everybody that matters to me run Linux, I'm not one of them. I'm not one of that group. And for me to also then be the host of Floss Weekly would then seem to you to be a bit like contradictory. But for me, Linux is just one piece of the entire open source spectrum, and I think I've made that pretty clear in the comments on the thread as well. And so I understand where you're coming from, because I can see that it doesn't make any sense to you that I wouldn't be running Linux as my primary desktop, but it does make sense to me because I have more goals than just open source from top to bottom for everything I ever run. And some of those goals are contradictory, unfortunately, so I have to choose, you know, among their that's the choice I make.
You see, your piece of my thread was just one small piece of it. I was talking about a greater picture, and I just, you know, offhandedly, I referred to your comment. So in that respect, I was wrong.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I also... As I read more of the thread on that, I was also, you know, sort of fascinated by the kinds of things that maybe you could do to make it a little more mainstream. And that's actually, you know, I think that's why I said I think the thread over the last couple of days actually turned interesting, because I finally sat back and said, okay, I want to help these guys. These guys are trying to do the right thing, so what can I do to help? And that's why I posted my Here's Some Constructive Thoughts thread. Posting anyway, which said that there are three things you can do. If you want Twit to carry more Linux things, you can pitch a show to Leo. You know, he's not got a lot of time left in his schedule, but if you can come up with a producer, or even like take this show and pitch it as part of the Twit network, that would be something that Leo would be open to discussing. Absolutely. Well, or something. Well, whatever. I mean, if you want more mainstream visibility,
controversy generating, maybe.
Well, I don't know. If you look at some of the things they do on some of the other shows, it's not all mainstream. It's not all, you know, this is the obvious. I mean, you know, you take a show like Windows Weekly or Mac Break Weekly. You know, there's definitely some opinions there.
There's some conflicting opinions.
Yeah, they probably don't have anybody farting into the microphone like we do.
Well, okay. Well, maybe there's some things that you might need to. I haven't listened enough to this show to know what you'd have to rule out.
We may have to clean up just a little bit.
But not that. Okay, we're exaggerating here.
Okay, well, but I'm saying this, so obviously that's a possibility. The second, which is the one that's more likely to happen, and we were talking about this pre-show, is that I really believe that Floss Weekly could be made weekly again if we have other people, like particularly Chris DeBona, who is already the original host, and Mad Dog, who said at one point that he was going to be doing some of the shows. If we have them step back up to the plate, so that they can cover the areas that I don't necessarily have familiarity with or find particularly interesting. And I even finished that comment by saying, I don't exactly find desktop Linux all that interesting, mostly because I don't run it anywhere, so I don't have a lot of knowledge about where it's going and what's interesting about it. And because I've also got this long list of things I really do want to cover and haven't gotten to them yet, so it's not my, not where it's going necessarily for me. And the third one, which I also think could still happen, and y'all should be thinking about this, is, you know, there's a lot of work I do ahead of getting a guest on that just really is a pain in the tail. It just takes time. You know, it takes time to put a guest on. And it's, you know, finding the right contact name, finding out whether they're even familiar with Skype, would they be willing to do a conversation, are they available on a Wednesday?
Keep telling them.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of work. Oh, obviously as a host, you would know this, but it's a pain. It's a real pain. And, you know, given a choice between doing something that I really do want to cover because I'm more familiar with it versus doing something I'm not as familiar with, I'm going to put my personal time, my unpaid time, into doing things that I really want to hear about and really want to interview the people with. Like Dan Ingalls on the early history of how the Mac came about because of Smalltalk. You know, that for me is fascinating. It's good stuff. It's early essential history, you know. Great stuff, and that one I actually had to work at to get to happen, but it was something I wanted to do. You know, Asterisk coming up, we got Asterisk in 3 weeks, got Mark Spencer on. That's also taken me a lot of work, but I know how essential Asterisk is to really making, you know, open source be something that's contributing to mainstream business, which is what's going to get open source everywhere. If you've got open source projects and products that are making business work as a viable alternative to paying and obtaining closed source stuff, it's going to be the entry point for everybody. So I love Asterisk. I want that to happen. So I put the time in to make that happen. But if you guys or somebody can bring me on a platter, this guy knows Skype. This guy is available these 3 Wednesdays. This guy is ready to go, and he's interesting to talk to, and this is a project that we think is interesting to Linux users everywhere, I will be happy to plug them into my schedule. I will have no qualms about that because basically I'm a lazy ass. So you do that work for me, they're in the schedule. It's that simple. So I think those, you know, once I sort of realized that what you guys were was how to get Twit to be a little bit higher visibility on Linux, there's your options. I think those are some, you know, some mighty fine options, but they're going to take some action on your guys' part.
So basically you want me to do your work for you.
Legwork,
no,
sir.
I want you
leg
to
work.
Just legwork. I'm still willing to have them on the show, interviewing them, doing what I have to do. I'm still willing to, you know, well, certainly it would be simple for me if Mad Dog did some of the other alternate weeks. That's no work on my part. And I'm willing to, you know, if you guys can present an idea, that's great. What I'm not willing to do is do things that aren't as interesting to me, given that I'm not paid for this. You know, that's all I'm saying. It's that simple. And it's not that I want less Linux on Twit. I would love to have Linux on Twit. It's just not going to be me doing it.
So you're open to other people helping produce the content then?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I think Linux is an important revolution in business software and desktop software. I think it's absolutely an important revolution. I mean, considering the number of installations of Linux in the last few years on people's desktops, just an amazing inroads there. I mean, I'd love to put everybody in Redmond out of business. That would be ideal for me. You know, and I'm even saying that knowing I have friends that work at Microsoft and depend on, you know, their income either directly or indirectly from Microsoft, I say that because I think that having open source is essential for us to be able to modify and adapt and adopt software, which always has to be done. It's just the closed source software makes it so much harder to do because we have to make sure that they give us the knob that we need instead of us just adding the knobs where we need them. I believe in that in that part of it. I really do. You know, I just don't run Linux in anything that's here we go. I don't run Linux in anything that's essential. I just don't.
So you're running what, PSD mostly on the server?
I run OpenBSD on my server because it's unattended for weeks at a time. And I have also said this in the thread, I am not competent to manage a Linux server. The Linux server that I was on before I ran OpenBSD got hacked by some rootkit. and that was enough of a burn. I can show you the scar right here. That was enough of a burn that I'm not ever going to do that again, and that's a personal choice.
That's fair enough. How long ago was that?
About 3 years ago. Maybe four now.
But this, but this is where you're running, if you don't mind.
It was Red Hat. Mm-hmm.
Did you have an instance of
so what
Telnet
do you,
running?
What, yeah, but what do you run now for your servers?
I run OpenBSD.
Oh, and you've been running those for OpenBSD for 3 years?
3.5, 4 years, yeah.
Have you seen the OpenBSD change in that amount of time? Are you still running like the same setup?
Oh, no, I update with every new release. So I follow that, and I follow the 15 patches every 6 months that change from for security perspective, yeah. Hmm. But none of them have been root from the outside. The only vulnerabilities that ever show up in OpenBSD are local attacks only, and that's never an issue for me because I only have three other trusted users on the system.
Fair enough. You know, BSD is a great piece of software, you know, a lot of...
And it's not just BSD. It's not just BSD. It's OpenBSD. I mean, Theo's paranoia is my sleeping aid. That's all I'm saying.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And I say it's because of my incompetence. If I was watching the box every day and could come in every day and, you know, watch the Red Hat announcements and make sure that I was up to date with the security patches, fine. But you got to admit that there's that window of vulnerability between when Red Hat says, here's the security hole and here's the time you can actually install it, that, you know, people are making broad sweeps and it's not like my server's private. It's out there, you know, serving pages for the public and it's well known. So, you know,
actually,
I don't
know. There isn't that window hole. Red Hat doesn't, you know, necessarily do their own releases for security patches. That's taken care of by the open source community as a whole. And Red Hat will release the RPM many times the same day as the vulnerability is found, just as any other version of Linux will. It's come
okay,
a long
but there's,
way.
But there's the delay between when I would notice that and when I would install it. That's the problem.
No, there again, there's an automatic yum updater that works throughout the day on most normal installations. We'll take care of that for you. You'd never even have to touch the box.
Okay, this wasn't true 5 years ago then, right?
No, it was not. No. That's one of the things I was getting
okay,
at.
That again
the,
is my...
With the 3 years ago, it's just something that's come a long way, just like any other operating system has. Like, you know, you're familiar with using Mac OS and stuff like that. Well, 5 years ago was way different than it is now. You know what I mean? It's the same
absolutely,
thing with
yeah,
the
no,
other
no.
operating system, with the exception of Windows, which has just been hideous the entire time.
Well, they have the Tuesday patch cycle or whatever that thing is, Patch Tuesday. But it's yeah, it's you know, I, and that's great. It's good that Linux has stepped up to the plate even with the security holes. That's great, you know. And for me, it's just that I run OpenBSD and I watch the errata sheet and the only errata in the last errata being important patches to put between the 6 month release cycles. The only things I've ever seen there that were external were related to OpenSSH, which affects everybody. So it's really been comforting to me to watch the kinds of, you know, lack of security holes that I've seen at OpenBSD. So again, I'm looking from the perspective that it's confirming my already made choice. So obviously I'm biased there, but I'm happy. I'm happy and I'm content, and it runs the five things I needed to run, and that's all I needed to do. You know, I needed that serve Apache. I needed to run postfix so I can have mail, and that's about it. So and SSH so I can SSH into the box. So that's about all that the box does for me, and I'm happy with it. And so, like I said, I'm incompetent at Linux, and I admit it.
It's almost like, you know, here we are, we're splitting hairs here, because Linux, BSD, I mean, it's kind of like we're all, you know, standing on the same soapbox or whatever. We're all on the same side here arguing over, you know, what some people consider really, really big, you know, differences. And, of course, there are differences, but in the totality of FLOSS, it's all under the same umbrella. And they're
yeah,
all
that's why I was
valid choices.
That's sort of why I got upset at you guys getting upset. It's like, wait a second, guys, I'm on the same team. I mean, you know, we might wear slightly different jerseys, but you know, and you may play forward and I play guard, but I mean, we're on the same team. You know, I've been pimping, you know, open software, making a living from it, in fact, for 20 years. You know, I've been figuring out ways to get this into more places and get more corporations to use it and get more individuals aware of it, you know, than most of the people that, well, not most people I hang out with because I'm mostly in open source now, but I mean, it's essential to me. And that's why it's like, oh my God. I mean, they're reading some weird overtone into something that I was using as a flippant comment. So, you know,
what it really boils down to, I think, and you know, I'm just as opinionated or more so than anybody else. But
okay.
What I think it really boils down to is that those of us who are open source people, you know, Linux people, BSD people, whatever, have had to work so hard to, quantify and justify what we do to everybody else that it's sort of become very habit-forming. And you become very defensive about it, you know, as a standard. So anytime you hear anything that somebody says that sounds sort of negative, or that you get the inclination is negative towards, you know, open source or something like that, you are automatically in defense mode, you know what I mean?
I went through that phase about 10 years ago, and then I grew out of it. I don't mean that to be like insulting or anything, but there is a time when you play it as a how do I say this nice like a tribe, like you're a member of the tribe or you aren't. But there is a place beyond that where you recognize that if someone says something, it is accurate for them and their experience and their history and their choices and the decisions and the evaluations they made based on that. So to react to that like let's see, how would you put this? Like to compare it to you having said that statement and then being upset about the fact that obviously you'd be wrong if you said it, it doesn't further the conversation. It doesn't help either of you. It gets you reactive and defensive and gets them off-puttish because you're simply reacting to their reaction. And what I've learned in order to be able to push the idea of open source, and particularly in my case, Perl and now Smalltalk, to people, is when someone says something disparaging about Perl or Smalltalk, I've got to figure out where they're coming from. I've got to analyze why would someone say that Smalltalk is slow? And I can't just react to that like, oh my God, they're wrong. I have to say, now, where might they have been looking in their life to get this statement? Is it something they know personally? Is it something they just quoting from the last Slashdot posting? And I found that to be a lot more useful than reacting as you said you did. But it took time for me to get to this spot. I'm not saying this is the way I was 10 years ago. I was tribal 10 years ago, absolutely. Don't say anything wrong about Perl. I was really there. So that's why I really relate to how you're doing it. But I'm saying there's a place beyond that that's a lot more powerful to get to. Does that help at all?
I guess my point, my point of my original blog posting was that it just seems lately everybody's just piling on. You know?
Well, okay.
It just seems like that.
Okay, so maybe it's a time to figure out why would everybody be piling on? What's different today than there was 3 months or 3 years ago when they weren't doing that? What's different? Well, is there something different in Linux, or is something different in the culture? Is there something? I mean, where is this coming from?
The big difference is that Vista was an unmitigated disaster. Okay, even though they claim that, you know, they've sold the most out of any of their releases. Okay, and a lot of people are looking at alternatives, whether that be Linux, whether that be Mac, whether that be BSD. That's
okay.
The big difference, really.
Actually, I think we have different flavors of Linux receiving some significant success where their presence wasn't as noticeable in the past. You have the ultra-mobile PCs coming out with a lot of them running a certain flavor of Linux. You have the rise of the popularity of Ubuntu as being a significant factor. I mean, I think it's being pushed out
into
the mainstream than it has ever
been. I'm very happy for Ubuntu. Because Ubuntu is actually the Linux distro that I can give my slightly geeky friends, and they can run this without any problem at all. And it's just, it's wonderful. It's, you know, here, I have an old PC. What can I run it? I hand them an Ubuntu Live Disk. It's great. It's absolutely the right choice for that sort of stuff, yeah.
Well, let me ask you something here. I mean, one of the complaints that I hear over and over again, all right, about mm-hmm. Linux is that it's for the geek. It's not for the, you know, general desktop user. It's not ready for the standard desktop user. And I have a problem with that from the perspective that I have seen people and given people and my own daughters given them a Linux system to use, and they use it just as well as if they used any other, you know, any would have used OS X or used Windows, you know, family members, friends that I've seen use it. The big difference is I see with Linux systems compared to everything else is that all those other systems, if you buy an Apple, you get OS X installed. You buy a PC just about anywhere, it comes with Windows. If you want Linux, you have to install it, and installing any operating system is not something the general user would be comfortable or maybe even capable of doing. And I think that there's that little barrier right there that unfortunately it exists, but it I think it's hard to say that, or almost false to say that Linux is not ready for the desktop user because the desktop user can't install it. But giving them a pre-installed machine that's set up and ready to go just like a Windows or OS X machine has been, I don't think that barrier of difficulty remains. I mean, what's your opinion
on clearly, that? It's clearly moving closer. It's clearly moving closer, but there, you know, and I think I said this in the thread somewhere too, is that I hate to just be repeating everything I said, but that's okay. There's a different audience here. So one of the things that I can do, if I gave somebody a Mac and it already had OS X installed on it, and they start calling me up and bitching about a question that I can't answer, so I can say, look, Apple Store, open 9 to 5, go online, schedule a Genius Bar appointment, and go. And they're gone. Now, I know there's some Linux distros that have the same sort of level of support. I don't know whether me handing an Ubuntu disk to somebody would have that level of support, though. Probably not. So that means that person will be bugging me for the next, you know, 3 months till they figure out every little thing that isn't in the manuals. And I tell you, I have a bunch of non-geek friends that can barely handle OS X. If I were to foist Ubuntu on them, it'd be even harder because I can't send them to the Genius Bar. And that's the difference for me, is that I know where the Apple Genius Bars are. I don't necessarily know where the every other Saturday Linux group install fest friendly bring your newbie machine here group is in their city. But I can tell you where the Apple Store is in that city. And that's the difference for me. It's getting there, and it's not there yet.
Okay. So that level of personal support is one area that is lacking in Linux and just about any other FOSS operating system. I mean, if it's probably, not OS X or Windows, it's more difficult to get that one-on-one personal support to actually go to somebody.
Yeah, and I'd have to say that if we were having this conversation 2 years ago, I would even be disparaging OS X at the same level, because I would say I don't really want to hand one of my friends a Mac because he's going to be calling me all day. You know, it's the same problem. I'm kind of happy that, you know, Windows acts like this great lightning rod that kind of keeps everybody else away from me. But finally we're at the point where Apple Genius Bars actually do work. Support there does work. And my Windows support now looks pale in comparison. But the thing about Windows is that everybody's brother has a Windows machine, so he can talk to his brother instead of me.
Honestly, I've converted several family members to Linux. You know, my brother-in-law, who I wouldn't classify as very technical, he upgraded his Ubuntu box to Hardy Heron without any input from me whatsoever.
Uh-huh. He probably changes his own oil, too.
Yeah, he does, but he's not really a computer geek. You know, he's just a regular user.
Yeah, but, okay. I brought that up just as a point. There are plenty of people out there that can drive just fine, but they don't know where their oil spigot is. I'm actually one of them. I go to Jiffy Lube. I do not know how to change oil in my car. Now, if you were to say, you know, you can improve the performance of your car by putting in this additive into whatever the thing is under the hood where they put additives, right? I don't know where that is, right? If you just put this in there, it would still be mysterious to me, and you'd have to, like, come over to my house and show me how to do it. Now, can I drive? I can drive just fine. But I don't know that last little bit. And I think you need to distinguish between the kind of person I am as a driver versus the kind of person who changes their own oil as a driver. And I think we have the same category of different groups of people with computers. You're the people you turned on to Ubuntu are probably oil changers, to mix the metaphors.
My dad, no way. Is he technical? He's running it. Seems to be okay.
Well, you know, I think one of the other issues
that
we have
here... But I mean, the tinkering. The willingness to tinker, though.
I understand your point. I see where you're going.
I think one of the other
Some
issues that we have
stupid.
Here is one of the differences that, say, Pat's family has compared to Joe Schmo's family is... Pat is the
Pat to turn back to.
Right,
Pat
is the driving force there. You know, he's the quote geek that they'll turn to if and when they have a problem.
True, yeah, and I don't want to be that for my friends.
So, barring not having that avenue of support, you're saying it makes it more difficult to proffer Linux as a solution to a non-technical person. Because there isn't the Linux Genius Bar or the Linux, what is it called? The what's Best Buy's group? Geek Squad. There's not a Linux Geek Squad, so to speak, yet.
I guess, yeah, probably, yeah.
And, you know, and that's fair enough. And maybe those are areas that we need to hopefully expand upon. And that's only going to take time. I mean,
it's come a long ways. It's really come. I mean, like, even just the whole Ubuntu effort to really make the desktop work for the average Joe. I applaud that effort. Thank you, Mark Shuttleworth. Thank you for all the people that put time into this thing and money into this thing. That's great. It really does mean, and especially like the live CD, so I can just drop it into a machine and say, try this and see if it works for you. If you do, you push two more buttons and it's installed. Lovely stuff. Wonderful stuff. This is great. This is where open source needs to be heading. And it's a lot better than it was 2 years ago. And 2 more years from now, we might not even be having this conversation. So that's great.
Well, you know, speaking of OS X, and you have admitted to liking OS X very much.
I tolerate OS X. Thank you.
Okay, so you tolerate OS X. Now, maybe you can help me with understanding something, but I've had some difficulty because I have used OS X in the past. I've used it. I used it for, 3 years, three years ago. And one of the things that I hear consistently about Apple and OS X is how innovative it is. And I am unclear as to what exactly people are so crazy about, and so, you know, what is it that they are holding up as this massive innovation, because I don't know. I'm getting it.
I don't know. I don't agree. I don't think it's that innovative. I mean, it's more copy of the great stuff. The only thing that really is interesting is that it seems to mostly all work together. In other words, it's I'm a practical guy, and it works. It works for me. It makes the most. It takes the most advantage of the hardware that I want to buy for it. It's a nice package, and it just runs. I mean, I don't have any particular love for OS X. It's the least painful operating system to get my job done from one day to the next.
You're not helping me out here, Randall. You're killing me.
Well, that's because I'm not that far away from you guys. That's the silly thing about it. We're on the same side, dudes. I am not that far from you.
I was hoping you could tell me.
No,
what
I am not
was.
A Mac fanboy. I'm not a Mac fanboy.
He's the Mac fanboy.
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
I have the same opinion there. It just works on the laptop.
Yeah.
I don't use it on my desktop. It just, I mean, I have a Mac Mini, but it runs iTunes, and that's all it runs.
Well, I have a much different opinion. I use my Mac OS X and love it because it makes me feel superior to Pat. And that's why.
Okay, my
if you
want to
feel all elitist on me, that's your ratio.
That that should be the
that's
next
right.
selling point. It makes you feel superior to Pat.
I remember
I
that survey. It was like, what, about 4 months ago?
Steve Jobs about that one.
So somebody didn't like my anti-Apple blog postings, Randall, and I was getting harassed at home. They would call me at my house. I had one guy call me at my house pretending to be an Apple lawyer, and it was getting a little ridiculous.
Uh-huh. Wow.
But there are crazies everywhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to kind of, like, turn it back to the original reason why we got... That you actually prompted you coming on our show. And by all means, you know, you're more than welcome to come on our show anytime you want. We have an open door policy. We welcome everybody. And, you know, it kind of stinks that some of the way we got you on the show because of some criticism that was unfounded, largely unfounded, and some, you know, I think some legitimate concerns that were cleared up more than adequately, and we're all pretty much coming from the same page here. But getting back to Pat's initial response or initial complaint about the negative Linux being portrayed negatively in some of the popular media, and citing particularly a couple of shows on the Twit Network, and I've had some mixed feelings about this myself, because on one hand, I mean, I look at, you know, the show that we do, and a lot of the similar shows, the Linux-based podcasts, are always slagging on Windows and Microsoft, and a lot of them are also, you know, complaining about OS X. And there is that, quote, fanboyish attitude that comes across for Linux and the BSDs being superior to the other operating systems. And I can understand and expect that we should be expecting that in something called Mac Break Weekly or Windows Weekly, and I think that it's that complaining too loudly that Linux is getting the short shrift on Mac Break Weekly when they're equally slagging on Windows, actually more so than they are on Linux. You know,
hey, do you have those kind of clips handy? Can you put like one of the clips from that you had in that list?
I can play any one of them.
Actually love listening to them. Just pick one at random. I want to hear it.
Do you want?
No, just one of them. Just give
you
me
just
one.
Want one. I can play them all.
You did that last time. I want to stop after one of them, and I want to see if there's any context I can apply for what that is. I'll completely realize that it's just. I mean, because there was a few there. You know, definitely the ones that Andy. Andy definitely can get a little wild about his Mac fanboyism, and that's because that's his experience with the other kinds of machines. But you're right, some of it's ignorance. I mean, I have ignorance about some of the modern things that are happening with Linux. I totally admit that, and I'm not sure that Andy necessarily would admit, you know, all the things he doesn't know, but that's okay. That's for him to defend
Andy's
on another show.
What's Andy's background, Randall? Do you know what his background is?
Andy and Leo, and I want to do this together because you kind of attacked both of them with a broad sweep, so let me do that. Andy and Leo's backgrounds are both mostly as journalists talking about technology. And as a result, they've been exposed not as programmer geeks like I've been, but more like as the end user, but as sort of the power end user, what do we need to know about these machines and what they do, and how do we talk about the unwashed masses about these machines and software that help run our lives? So that's sort of their background, both of them. And Leo, I have to say, is actually fascinated by a lot of things across the board. I know Leo a lot better than I know Andy. I've been on a couple of cruises with Andy, and I've read some of his writings, and that's about it. So I don't really know much about him other than that. But I can tell you that Leo, I mean, we're off camera together. We're chatting, you know, off mic. He's a pretty sharp guy, and he really wants to convey an accurate truth and a balanced truth, but occasionally he's going to say things that, to somebody who's tribal, not very good.
I don't have a problem with Leo, okay? I'm actually a fan of Leo's. Leo was on the show about 3 years ago. I don't know if you're aware of that. And he was nice enough to come on and do a pretty long interview with me. And I'm a fan of his since he was on Tech TV, when it was called ZDTV, matter of fact, okay? From what I've heard of Leo, he seems to get open source. He understands the basics of it. He gets what it's all about. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, my issues with some of the other guys on some of the other shows, Okay.
Yeah, well, I don't listen to Windows Weekly, so I. Yeah, I don't listen to Windows Weekly, so I can't talk to Paul at all. I mean, talk about Paul at all. It's not my area. But if you got one of the Andy clips, I'd like to hear that. Maybe I can laugh at it along with you guys.
All right, well, here we go. Here's one of them.
The last thing I ever want is for any piece of technology, any hardware or any software to be controlled by the open source movement, because they are really, really, really bad at creating end-user applications and end-user hardware.
Wow, yeah, I don't agree with that at all, and I don't know why Andy said that. That's just way off base. I'm with you guys on that one. That one, that's Andy not listening.
The one that doesn't
no, really no, no, don't be tribal on us here.
Well, I think he's out of touch. That is completely inaccurate. I mean, it's especially given that, you know, I'll quote some Perl examples back, but every single number that built the Boeing 777 went through at least three different Perl passes to manipulate and manage the number from the CAD machines to the CAM machines. So I wonder if Andy ever gets on a Boeing 777. You know, it's that kind of thing. Open source runs everything now, and for Andy to have that kind of a naive opinion is just not paying attention. And I would actually be interested to wonder what triggered that for him. Next time I see him, he's on the next Mac Cruise, I think. Next time I see him, I want to see kind of where he was. Now this is where I'm going with it. It gets me curious about what particular scar is he demonstrating to have said that. What burned him to have him say that? That's what
he's
I want to know.
He was going off on Drupal. He was really laying into Drupal. He had a lot of Drupal setting it up and using it.
Yeah, well, maybe he, you know, overgeneralized from that. Maybe Drupal itself is to blame for that opinion, you know, and that's a fair cop, but, you know.
Maybe he's just got his panties in a wad.
But nobody does that accidentally. That's the thing. It's always driven by experience and best thought. I mean, do you personally, I'm saying that to y'all, each individually, do you ever say things that don't come from your experience? I mean, really. It's all about where you've been. It's all about what you know and what you've experienced and what you've concluded and what you've evaluated. And he's just doing that. So some experience he had led him to say that. And that's what would make me curious. What, Andy, were you specifically burned by to have that kind of a burn about open source? That's what I would want to ask him next.
Do you want to hear some of the other clips?
Yeah, play the other ones. Why not?
I want to death fight. Go to the next one. Let me go to the next one.
We'll do the. We can get to the Drupal ones because people are hot.
It's running
away. We'll play the ones before the Drupal one.
Okay.
I've got the latest Ubuntu, like just a foot and a half away from me. I've got the latest OpenOffice. I got the latest pretty much everything. And I still don't have a working Wi-Fi connection on that notebook. Okay. And the OpenOffice is still the equivalent of what Microsoft Office was 4 years ago. It's certainly not the equivalent of iWork. Yep.
Okay.
That's
well,
not a good example.
I would
that's
say.
An opinion.
Yeah, and I also would say that iWork actually is still beyond anything I can do with OpenOffice, but that may be my inexperience with OpenOffice. So I would agree with him there. iWork still has the lead on that. If you haven't seen numbers of iWork, which how far advanced it is beyond what I've seen in Excel and OpenOffice, then you don't have the comparison that I get to have, but I think numbers is far beyond what anything can do in the calculator part of OpenOffice.
OpenOffice being 4 years behind Microsoft Office, I think that's a bit of a stretch.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that's an overstatement again. I think that's an exaggeration for a point. And that's actually Andy's general strategy, is he exaggerates to really drive the point home. And I agree, that's for someone who you're wanting fair and balanced reporting from, you're not going to get that from him because of that.
And you know what? I shudder to make this comment, but it's been on my mind because I can easily turn around and say, whoa. You know, to make this comment is almost being hypocritical, but one thing that keeps coming back to me is that what the hallmark of the Twit network, every show that's the Twit network, I think starts off with, says netcasts you love from people you trust. And that to me, you know, it's difficult for me to sometimes swallow such, you know, comments like that, if it's supposed to be coming from people I, quote, trust.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I can almost turn around and look at our show and say, you know, is some of the anti other operating systems messages that we spread not coming from, you know, a trustworthy position? You know, is that being unfair? But anyway, you were going
to
say.
Well, you have a right to your opinion, too. And I think what's important as a smart listener is to understand the biases of the speaker. And I think once you've listened to Andy talk or Leo talk or me talk for any length of time, you can figure out what biases to subtract back out of the conversation. And if you have to do it more for Andy than you do it for Leo, or more for Leo than you do for me, or vice versa, then you know, maybe that makes us less qualified as a fair and balanced journalist in your mind, but everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got a bias. That's not anything we can get rid of. There is no neutral talk ever. You know, there's only the difference between where you are and where that person is, and how do you subtract that back out of the conversation?
I guess my whole concern with some of the other shows on Twit is that a lot of the audience for Twit aren't real hardcore tech type people. There's a lot of people who are new to technologies or just starting to get into it, and I really think that, you know, some of the negative comments definitely have an impact.
I would say that's true for the flagship show for This Week in Tech. But I think the people that are on, that are listening to Mac Break Weekly, are already probably sold on the Mac, and the random comments that Andy makes isn't going to make one hill of beans one way or the other. And I think if people listening to Paul on Windows Weekly, they're already sold on Windows, and saying it one way or the other ain't going to make much difference there either. You know, so I think I understand what you're saying, and I would be concerned if it was on the general Twitch show. But I think when you start getting into these specialized podcasts, it's not going to be that different. I mean, I think, I said this in the thread, again, bringing this up, is you really want to look at how many people were on the edge at that point listening to that show, and this now decided it for them. Probably not a lot. And so I support your statements about Twit. I think that the Twit show itself should be general, and a lot of generalists listen to that. But I think once you get down to a specific show like MacBreak Weekly or even Floss Weekly or Windows Weekly, I think the people that are listening that are probably already have the right bent already, and I don't think these sort of slightly disparaging comments, grossly overstatements, so on, are really going to move that many people away from their own opinion about something. Does that make any sense?
I hear what you're saying. Fair enough. I hear what you're saying.
I guess it boils down to pundits, you know. The blog radio guys are talking about pundits and people with opinions. Yeah, everybody is entitled to opinion. Everybody has strong beliefs, you know, what they like, what they don't like. You know, that's all fair and everything. My point of view shouldn't be worth any less of Andy's point of view. You know, I've got close to 15 years working in IT. You know, it pays my bills. I've been doing it a long time. You know, I have my opinions. I've used different kinds of technology over the years. You know, one person's opinion shouldn't be higher or greater than somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they're heard by more people on a given week.
Yeah, that's sort of where I'm at, too.
All right, do you want to hear the Drupal ones?
Sure, why not? I can laugh at them along with you.
I downloaded Drupal. It took me 4 days to figure out how to put a freaking picture inside a blog post, because, you know, the build that was the current build didn't support that built-in. Oh, but that's okay. Just download and install this plugin. Okay, I downloaded. How do I install it? Well, we're not going to document that. Well, just post on the forum. Okay, 3 days later, no one's still. Oh God.
And right now, I'm doing a lot of work with Drupal, and this is an open source CMS application.
Don't get started on Drupal. It sucks.
Well, again, that may say more about Andy's ability to understand things.
Maybe we should send over Chad Wallenberg over to Andy's house.
You know, I did it. I did it.
Top of a Drupal install.
I did an install of Drupal today. It took me 8 minutes, so I don't know.
8 minutes.
8 minutes. That's the first time I.
Yeah,
ever
I mean,
did it.
I mean, at least I'm coming on the Linux show admitting that I am incompetent as a Linux sysadmin. I will clearly admit that. That is not. You know, I'm not going to stand here and say Linux is hard. You know, no, it's because I'm stupid. Okay? I don't know that Andy would ever be there. Maybe Andy thinks that the software should be turnkey and drop in and easy to use. Maybe Drupal's not that for him. Or maybe it's a mismatch for what he wants to do. Maybe as a technology writer, he doesn't have the kind of programming chops that he really needs to really make Drupal work for him. Might be.
Some people
now, see,
want that.
I got
they
this impression
it,
that all you guys at the Twit Network were like this big, like, buddy-buddy group all going out partying all the time, all hanging out together.
No.
And now...
No, we Skype in. We Skype in.
Out.
We never see each other.
My whole world is shattered. The whole world view.
No. You know, and I'll say the same thing to Andy's face. You know, if Andy had troubles with Drupal, it might be Andy. I would say that to his face any day. And if he hears this... Andy, I love you. You're a great guy, but you know, maybe if something's difficult to you, it's not it. It might be you. And with that note, no, everybody went quiet.
I'm not that familiar with Andy. I don't know what his background is. It's not fair for me to compare my example, you know, using Drupal because I do this stuff on a regular basis. It's not fair to me to say, well, I can set up Drupal and get it running in 8 minutes when that's what I do. You know, that's what I do. That's my job, playing around with this stuff. And it's not fair for me to compare myself, and I shouldn't. That's not what it's about. Yeah, it should be embracing, not pushing away.
Anyway, any other clips? I want to hear these. These are great.
I can play the rest of
them. You got a Leo clip? Maybe.
You know what?
You got a Leo clip?
The only Twit clip we had, the only Twit clip, was the one that you made. That was it.
And now you have the context.
Two shows. I just took two shows. I took one Mac Weekly and one Windows Weekly.
Okay.
I didn't really put a lot of effort into it, to be honest. Maybe it was worth the work.
That's fine.
If I had really spent a lot of time, I probably could have dug out some real zingers.
Well, anyway, I hope I'm able to give some context to Andy and just to, you know, taking anything out of context is a little bit suspicious. So we really got to pay attention to like where these were said, how they were said, what are they really in reaction to, and maybe it's in reaction to something. You know, maybe it's the smoke of a distant fire. Maybe it's they're reacting to something that isn't. They're present in the conversation, so it makes the conversation sound a little weird. And I realize that that means that if there were people on the fence listening to that show, it might have had an impact. But I think, as I sort of, you know, ranted on about a moment ago, I think that the people that are on the fence listening to the more specialized of these shows probably won't make a difference at all.
Well, I have a few more Andy clips, if you'd like to listen to them.
Oh, okay. Why not? What the hell? We're already here.
Optimally is Steve Jobs saying, no, this sucks. This is a piece of crap. We're not going to release this. But, you know, if you do that in open source, we're like, okay, well, we're going to have a way to
do that. You're right. Open source is by consensus. And you're right. That is really a flaw. I agree that Linux is still not as user-friendly as it ought to be, but...
I really don't think that open-source developers, by and large, understand the needs of regular end users who just want a solution and want to go home.
I think that can be very true. That can be very true, and like I say, a lot of the things that I've looked at in open-source over the last 5 years in particular, it's been hard to use.
I just disagree with a lot of people. There are some people who have really gone upriver with... open source, saying that software wants to be free, all copyrights are fascist. I'm saying, okay, fine, let's see the best image editor you can create. We'll stack it next to the best image editor that a private company can create, and it's not going to be any contest whatsoever.
Well, okay, I like that. I was sort of laughing at that because, again, Andy's going to an extreme to demonstrate his point, and that sort of seems like Andy's MO now that you've been pulling these out. And I've actually been thinking back to every time I've listened to Andy, that's probably pretty close. But I will say, and again, no offense to open source developers, which is always the thing you say when you're about to offend them, so let me retract that. I have ideas for software all the time, but I am not a card-carrying UI specialist. So, if I create something on a web, and as an example, this you could go to my website and see just how poor I am at layout and design and all that stuff. That's not my area. And so you have these wonderful single person or two or three people working on a project, open source projects that are worthy, they're coded well, they're designed well on the inside, but they really could have used a UI touch here and there. You've got to admit that you've seen example after example of this.
I would
Is there
admit
any disagreement
that,
about that?
You know what really
and that's what Andy that, let me finish.
Go ahead.
Let me finish the thought though. And that is what Andy was pointing at. Apple has some people they can pay whose sole job it is to sit down in focus groups and one-way mirrors and eyeball trackers and all that junk to really make this thing work in a way that an open source developer typically will not spend the time to do. And I think that was Andy's only point. For that part of it, anyway. Now, let's not get into the image editor thing yet, but can you at least see that I think that's where Andy was coming from there?
I sort of see that's where he's coming from, but there's one statement that I hear recurring from him and even you earlier that really, really frosts me.
Okay.
Let me tell you what it is.
I'll address it.
It's the statement that a lot of people make that, you know, well, I have looked at this, you know, Linux software over the last 5 years, or I looked at it, you know, 5 years ago, was working with it, and that doesn't hold up to anything that we have now. And what I get out of that is, like, a lot of people that say, in fact, I'll go online and saying that the vast majority of the people that say that, the last time they looked at any Linux stuff was 5 years ago. And
okay.
That sort of implies that they haven't even given it a fair shot. You know, they're comparing apples to oranges. They're comparing something 5 years ago, which was vastly different than it is today, to, you know, a modern operating system of today of a different nature. You know what I mean? Like they compare Linux 5 years ago to, you know, Windows Vista today, or Linux 5 years ago to you know, Mac OS X or something like that. And it really is not a fair comparison.
And I agree, that's totally unfair, and I don't, if I led you to believe that, except for my Linux comparison from 4 years ago, because that was the time that I was using it as a server, that I really don't have a need to look at it right now. I mean, OpenBSD is good enough again. I'm that way, though. I'm that kind of lazy, and I'm going to continue to be that kind of lazy, and maybe today's Ubuntu would actually do better for me than OS X, but the problem is I've invested a bunch of money in a bunch of applications that are now on my, you know, I'm using day by day, and it would take me a while to get caught up again in learning the parallel applications under Ubuntu to get the same work done. And then I'd still know what to do with my iPhone then. I mean, do I have a syncing solution like iTunes for my iPhone? Because I've also gotten used to the way my iPhone works. Do I need to get a new phone now too? I mean, where does it stop? So I admit that there, you know, I haven't looked at Linux except 4 years ago in any detailed way, except for the Ubuntu that I run inside VMware. But you know,
that's where the comments go, because no one ever says, you know, well, the last time I looked at Linux 5 years ago, I didn't really like it, so I switched. What they say is, you know, I've been using Linux for 5 years, and it doesn't hold any, you know, hold any weight with the stuff that I'm using now.
I don't know. The one comment that really got me from Andy was his comment about commercial applications versus open source applications. And that
you mean it's Photoshop versus the GIMP thing?
Right.
Well, that's just
okay.
One example. There's so many others that you can talk about.
Well, I told you that looking at the stuff I work has works better for me than anything I've ever seen in OpenOffice. And I'm talking about the current OpenOffice that I invoked just yesterday. So I'm talking about, you know, this is not 5 years ago OpenOffice versus iWork today. I'm talking about OpenOffice that I downloaded and installed yesterday, because I always maintain the current version on my system, versus, you know, what I'm actually using with iWork and the stuff I'm doing with Keynote and the stuff I'm doing with Numbers. As far as I can tell, the stuff that's in OpenOffice isn't up to it yet. And I have a job to do. I have a task to do. And if Keynote gets my job done better, than the presenter in OpenOffice, then I'm going to use Keynote, because that's what I have to do by the end of the day. I have to get my job done. I am a tool user, not someone who isn't willing to use an $89 product just because it costs money and it's locked up software.
That's fair enough. That's your point of view. There are other software comparisons we can make. Exchange versus Zimbra.
Exchange
versus Apache.
And Internet Explorer
7 versus Mozilla.
I'm going to say anything in open source beats anything in Redmond. How's that? Does that make some people happy here? Would that be okay? Because I do believe that. I do believe that. But I do believe there are special products that people have focused a lot of commercial money to develop on, like perhaps Keynote, that do better than the equivalent open source thing. And that's not the fault of the open source community. It's just that this is the time and energy and money that's been thrown at it is different. And that's how it works.
That's fair. I'm willing to say that, yeah, there's definitely some commercial applications that are better than open source applications. He was saying all, you know, which is...
Yeah,
RMS here.
Not true.
and that's the broad strokes that I think
my buddy Richard will be listening to this and rolling over, man.
Yeah, whatever.
Don't be saying that stuff.
Yeah, whatever. I'll arm wrestle RMS any day, and have.
I don't think you'd want to get that close, dude.
Oh, I have, unfortunately. I've been on a cruise ship with him for a week, so I already know, and I've been at a dozen conferences with him already, so yes.
You're just confusing the question, that's all.
You're confused.
Hey, I was on the same cruise ship with both Eric Raymond and Richard Stallman. Imagine that.
Did they have a wrestling match? I would love to see that.
It was a shouting match. It was really, really fun. Mad Dog had to arbitrate, and I'm not kidding. It sounds like fiction, but it's completely fact. Happened right in front of me. I've got pictures on my website. So yeah.
The funniest thing are those pictures from the Atlanta Linux show from 10 years ago, where they had a gun range buff, and they went to a range, and Richard Stallman actually went to the range and shot guns with Eric Raymond.
Yeah. Cool. So any other Andy comments there? Did I address the... No, I guess we covered all that last Andy comment, right?
You shouldn't defend them, and we shouldn't expect you to defend them. Andy is Andy. Randall's Randall.
But I think he's the representative for the whole Twit network. He speaks for everybody
I do not. I do not.
Let's move on to Paul next.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. I can't defend any of that. In fact, I'd probably agree with you 100% about anything Paul says. Because Paul's going to be a Windows fanboy. I can bet that.
But isn't everybody a fanboy to a certain degree? Seriously,
yeah,
think about it.
Well, but I think there are some people, though, that recognize that the choices they make are the result of a series of sometimes unfortunate compromises. And therefore, their defense of their choices is always... It's got a footnote. Others who don't understand that the very same process happens for them... And they think that their choice is absolutely right without a footnote. And I think you can distinguish those two groups of people. And I think I would call the latter group fanboys in the proper sense. I would call the former groups the non-fanboys. I don't know what else to come up with for that. And somebody in one of the chat rooms says, I don't see Paul as a fanboy. But I don't know. I haven't listened to Paul, so I don't know. Is he a fanboy? I don't know.
It depends on.
I don't know. He sends a lot of mixed messages, Paul, throughout what I've heard of him. You know, I've heard him criticize all the different OSs. I've heard him praise them, you know, here and there. I mean, the clips that I pulled in that episode, he said a couple of positive remarks regarding Linux, and then he just totally, laid into it. You know, it's. When I pulled those clips, I mean, someone on the forum was accusing me for poaching and doing a hack job. You know, I was just pulling clips to make my point that this type of stuff exists. People are aware of it. My whole point is that, you know, to Leo and the rest of those guys, is there are Linux people out there. We do listen, and we don't we don't like some of the comments. That's my only point. And I think that, to the broader audience, those comments do a lot of damage. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, and I hope that my statement about it being not necessarily the fence tipper for anybody, except on Twit, and I agree that Twit should be as neutral as possible simply because it is a broader audience. And if you start hearing comments like that there, one of the things you can do is that that show is taped live on Sunday nights, and there is a chat room that people pay attention to during the show. And if you were to be in that IRC chat room and give a factual challenge to an opinion that has just been stated, it will likely get brought into the context of the show, because Leo does watch the chat room.
Yeah, we can see him on that video now. He's always watching the chat room.
Yeah, exactly. So consider that. Not the Stick'em chat room, but the IRC chat room on DSLExtreme.com. If you are in there while it's taping and you hear something for which you have a factual challenge, please include it. It will make the show better. It will bring more visibility to what you believe is the truth. And that's absolutely something that I'm sure Leo would invite. Absolutely. I mean, I can't fully speak on his behalf, but I'm going to tell you, as a podcaster myself, I want to know when I'm saying something that has a factual error to it, completely.
Fair enough.
Okay.
You know, my message, if you could bring it back to Leo, is just try to keep Linux on an even keel with the other OSs out there.
Well, and like I said,
he seems to get the whole concept of it. That's fine, and he can't control what everybody else says. You know.
Yeah. But as I just said earlier is that Leo is absolutely willing to do more stuff with Linux on Floss Weekly. It's just that it won't be me, bringing it in, just because I don't find, I'm not that experienced with it. I don't find it that interesting to go do the research on it. So, get Mad Dog to do every show that I'm not doing. Get Chris DeBono to work on some stuff because he was much more Linux-oriented. That'd be great. Pitch a show and say, Leo, we want you to, include this in your Twit network and, either produce the show yourselves and have him include it on the home pages and talk about it on his other shows, or get him to do a show with you in his taping schedule and make it work. That's all that really has to happen. I mean, Leo, is doing Floss Weekly mostly because I'm bringing it to him. I didn't start out that way, but really, I do all the production work. He basically, the 5 minutes before the show goes on, he reads my notes, and we interview the guest, and then 5 minutes after it's over, he hands it to Dane, and Dane pushes it, and that's it.
So what you're saying then is the next Floss Weekly should include you and Leo and we four, right?
If we can get it all arranged,
straighten
sure.
Them all right out.
The show that really needs to be made is a Twitch show where Leo's mentioned it before, where you get a couple Linux guys, a couple Mac guys, a couple Windows guys, a couple BSD guys, and you just have at it. And somebody who's knowledgeable about all the licenses, what are some of the issues, someone who's impartial to a certain degree, and have them moderate it. I think that would be a great show.
I don't think Skype can handle that.
That would be fun.
No, Skype couldn't handle that.
Astrid could
probably handle that.
Yeah, well, that would be fun, actually. That sounds like a lot of fun.
I think a show like that would degenerate too quickly to ever be on air.
Maybe.
Very quickly, yes.
Yeah, well, could it be any worse than some of the other podcasts I've listened to?
You know what, though? At
You've
the
been
end of
listening
the day,
to our back shows again, huh?
People are free to listen or not listen to something,
True.
You know, people can go out there and rant and rave, and if you don't like what they're saying, then don't listen.
Right. Exactly.
Well, you know what? I want to thank you, Randall, for coming on the show tonight and clearing this stuff up. We are by no means telling you you have to leave. not at all.
But you got some stuff you want to talk about. Yeah.
Well, we got. But I also have to. I have to pull somebody else in.
One other show that you should have, Randall, is Ken Stark's Helios. They're doing Lindependence 2008 in a couple weeks, where they're going to convert a town in Northern California.
No. It's going on right now, and that's who I'm going to pull in here in just a minute.
Pull him in here, man.
In just a minute.
Do you know Ken, Randall?
I don't, actually.
He's great. His nickname is Helios, he goes by. It's Ken Stark. So.
Cool.
And he has a blog, and he's a Linux advocate, and he does some interesting stuff. You remember the Tux 500?
Yeah, I believe I know of him. Yeah, I believe I know him, but I don't know him. Yeah, that's great. I'll tell you what, I'll sign off here, and if people have comments, they can comment some more on your thread. I'll keep watching that. But if they want to send me personal mail and bitch at me about things, I'm open for that. You can email me at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, at Stonehenge, Stonehenge.com. And that address is also in the thread, so if you missed that, just go to the thread on your forum. But really, you know, I want to be called to the carpet if I'm doing something that doesn't work for people and we have the facts to back it up. I'm completely willing to hear where I'm factually incorrect. I'm completely willing to understand when I'm biased and need to kind of tone it back. I really want to, you know, make it work for everybody, so... And I'll pass along your comments to Leo, and I think if we get Mad Dog on there a little bit more often, and Floss Weekly will be a different character, and I don't think you're ever going to do anything about Andy, and I don't think you're going to get rid of him off Mac Break Weekly, so you might just have to live with that. So there you go. And thank you for having me on. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on, clearing the air.
Yes, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Randall.
Thanks, guys.
Good to have you on, and I really enjoyed reading your responses in the forum, too.
Oh, yeah, and I'll keep watching there. Don't worry about that. Thanks, guys. I'm out of here.
Thanks.
Take it easy.
Thanks, Randall. And if Leo ever wants to talk to us, let him know we're willing to listen.
I'll pass along.
Thanks a lot. Keep doing a great job.
Bye.
Thank you. I'm going to move over to my other phone and give Larry a call and pull him into the conference, okay?
All right.
Shut up, Alan. I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to Lincoln and Pat.
A resident Apple fanboy. Alan, seriously, how many Apples do you actually own?
How many?
What's the count? How many do you own? What's the count?
Two, really.
Those old boxes?
No, I still have the old iMacs. So I have two of those.
How many of
those
do you have sitting around?
Two of those. They're bookends right now. Because that's what they look best as at this point in time.
Okay.
But otherwise, I have a Mac Mini and I have a MacBook.
All right. So you got both. So you have two Apple boxes. How many Linux boxes do you have running?
Running?
Yeah.
Do I get to include my TiVos?
Sure.
Let's see. There's a TiVo. There's a PS3, which runs Linux as well. Well, two TiVos, so that's three. I got four boxes up here, so that's seven.
What about your router? Are you running a Linux firmware on there, or you just got the stock stuff on there?
On which one?
Well, you have Linksys, don't you?
Oh, the Linksys box?
Yeah.
Yeah, my router is just the standard WRT, what is it, 54G?
Right. So you're not running you're not running the alternate firmware.
No, unfortunately, I bought one and didn't realize I picked up a version 5. That had the smaller amount of RAM that you can't put WRT software or whatever it's called.
There's a couple of different ones out there. Tomatoes.
Yeah, unfortunately my router you can't put that on.
And you also got the Nokias though.
And the Nokias, yeah, we didn't count that.
And the Mythbox.
And the Mythbox was counted, but
Peter 64 is don't let them cut the TiVos.
Excuse me?
Peter 64 says don't let you count the TiVos.
Oh, well, why? TiVos run Linux. After the show, I'll be pulling down a couple of Star Trek episodes and converting them. It does a nice job recording. It does, you know, I use it
using
in addition
my
to my Mythbox. Yes, using your script. Works
very
nicely.
There you go, right there.
What we needed to do, though, it has to work and realize the things that are already downloaded on there.
I was going to do that, but I thought if I had did that and put that in like Bash Potter, you know, keep a log file of what it had downloaded already, that the only thing I would accomplish is completely filling up all my hard drive space everywhere.
Hey, wait. You know,
I'd have to put it on a computer that could just run forever and... Because it takes a long time to download that crap off the TiVo, right?
Yeah.
Those giant 3 or 4 gig files or whatever. And,
there'll be three Star Trek episodes coming in tonight. Well, they were recorded last night. I'll copy them down tonight. But tomorrow morning, they'll all be converted, though.
Mm-hmm. Alan.
Yeah, I just did 10 overnight last night, so.
Alan.
Yes.
Is Larry there?
Larry's here.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure, because you wouldn't be quiet, Alan, and I needed to find out.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all right. You know, that was actually pretty interesting about the TiVo, so...
You don't want TiVo, Larry. You want myth. Alan is a myth TV creator.
I use both. Yeah, I'll verify that, too. I use both of them, though.
I see.
I'm the one that just uses the TiVo now, so... But then again, I wrote the cool little script to get all your stuff off there and convert it off for your N800, which is, you know, handy to have.
Yeah, I mean, it works perfectly fine. I said, you got to get a man. I have to go in there and edit it all the time because my wife has all the soap operas that she records on it, so I got to make sure I take those off. But other than that, have to write it so it ignores all soap operas.
Young and the Restless aren't yet back, Kyle.
Yeah, she's got like every single one that's on during the day gets recorded on there. Which is why I keep TiVo, because then it keeps it off of my myth box. I ain't got to worry about it. My myth box can go with the more important things like cartoons.
Yeah, Venture Brothers season 3 started up. Do you know that?
It did?
Yeah, it started
they're
up.
Like, they're like the third episode already.
Yeah, 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Crap.
And Metalopolis is also all new.
So I'm going to have to run over there to my Myth TV web interface and correct that problem. In the meantime, I would really love to hear...
Those songs are hilarious. Those songs that they sing are hilarious. You have to put on closed captioning so you can actually read what they're saying. It's hilarious, though.
In the meantime, I would really love to hear what is going on with Lindependence 2008.
Well, what you'd like to hear. Okay, well, that's good. That sounds like my cue. Well, we had a pretty successful Sunday, I think probably... Well, let me define success. The first guy that came in said, take Windows off my machine, and we had about five or six others do the same thing during the course of the day. I mean, they didn't even want to, want to deal with Windows anymore.
How many was that, did you say?
Okay. Well, the first guy that came in just said, install, I think he installed Ubuntu on his laptop. And then during the course of the day, I think we had about five or six people that went home with solely Linux on their machines and no dual booting or anything like that. During the course of the day on Sunday, we had about maybe 150 people over the 4 hours or 4.5 hours of the event, which is, out of the number of people in the town, it's not a great, number, but significant enough, I think. Most people went home with live CDs. Some people went home with, with their machines on Linux only. They went home with generally information about Linux. So Tuesday night, which was last night, it wasn't as well attended, but we had several people go out with Linux, which kind of actually blows a bit of a hole into our theory. We were kind of expecting people to be a little more apprehensive about it, and dual boot or boot off of a USB drive or something like that. But what we're finding is people already don't like Windows enough to go ahead and install Linux on their machines anyway. So, that's a good problem to have, actually, in the grand scheme of things. Ken Starks was here. He's actually, I think, between here in Phoenix or between Phoenix and Austin at this point. I don't know. He said he'd try to call in, but at 10,000 feet or whatever they fly, whatever Southwest flies at, I don't know if he'll be on.
So how long is this still going on for, another, until the end of June?
It's going on for another week. We're going to have another meeting on the 26th, and probably the 26th is a firm date. The other date that's not firm is either the 22nd or 23rd. On the 28th, we're asking some people to go ahead and go Microsoft free for a week. However, we've already got about 12 or 13 people who are already converted straight to Linux. So, you know, that again, that experiment with having them go Microsoft free has actually been a success in these cases because they've already gone Microsoft free. So.
So it's been rolling along as, in your opinion, a pretty good success, huh?
Oh yeah, no, it's been going, it's going better than I expected. Yeah, and I want to thank you guys for your donations, by the way.
You're welcome.
You didn't get an email from me, and I'm really sorry about that. I'm a little behind in that regard, but I did want to thank you guys for kicking in a little bit.
You don't have to thank us. We should be thanking you.
Well, thanks for thanking me. I think it's very successful. You know, we don't have, you know, everybody on board, obviously. We don't have the whole town, you know, beating down our door. By the same token, we don't have, you know, Ken and I weren't tarred and feathered and run out of town or anything. So that's another plus.
So, with the people that have been exploring Linux, is it too early to tell yet? I mean, have they come back with a positive response? Have you had anybody coming back with a positive response yet?
Not yet. It's only been a few days, and I guess, you know, folks are still sort of kind of feeling their way through it. They have, we have a support team of volunteers who are fielding calls and taking, are ready to field calls, I guess I should say, because we haven't had any yet. Wait a minute, let me back up, that's not true. I did have one yesterday, and it was actually fairly simple. We're expecting people to take a few days, you know, get used to it, take a few laps, see what they like and don't like about it. And we kind of emphasized that, too. We said, you know, if there's something that you're really not happy about, you know, we want to know about that, too. But so far, and again, it's only been a few days, we haven't heard anything either way. So I'm assuming that not hearing anything bad is good, and not hearing anything good is probably, you know, like par for the course. So
it's interesting that you brought up support for this. Did you set up any external support, you know, for the community, like helping them to start up a lug or something like that?
Right. It's funny you should mention that. We are forming a lug in Felton, and that was actually kind of an afterthought. Believe it or not, it was, if I can back up a little bit in the history of Santa Cruz, the SC and SCO, obviously a Santa Cruz organization, and there's a lot of SEO types who still, you know, live in the area. And one of them lives in Felton, the same as Bob Lewis. He and I talked about having a lug or setting up a lug in Felton. That's probably going to go forward, you know, as we go along here. A couple of other things that happened during the course of the event were kind of interesting. First of all, we've already got somebody in suburban Portland who's interested in doing the same thing in the next couple of months. So that's kind of going forward. Somebody came from another part of the town, from South Santa Cruz, a town called Live Oak. And he's the manager of one of the auditoriums down in Live Oak. And he said that he'd be glad to have us down there as well doing the same thing. So we may take our trip on the road, or, you know, project on the road. So, which would be kind of interesting. But in any case, yeah, let's see, you know, a lot of Bandriva discs went out, some Fedora discs went out, Ubuntu was there. Actually, you know, somebody called up from Debian, a Debian user from Santa Cruz, and said, hey, you know, can I represent Debian? Or no, he said, actually, I'm going to have to contact Debian, but I'd like to represent him. And I said, well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you can represent him. So he came, and I don't know how many. I don't think he got anybody started on Debian, but he was actually there, and people got to know it. So, on the whole, it worked pretty well. And we're looking forward to next week. And if we do have people who do want to dual boot and do the Microsoft free thing for a week. You know, we're still up for that, but you know, the response where people have been coming in and saying, you know, just get me as far away from Windows as possible, and you know, we've been accommodating them, has been a little more promising than we actually anticipated.
Has it been fun?
Yeah, it has been. The only thing is, I'm not as young as I used to be, and unfortunately, you know, at the end of the day, I just, like, you know, pass out. But, I used to do that when I was younger earlier under different circumstances, but that's another story. But anyway, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, Ken's been really, I mean, you know, Ken and I, this is the first time he and I met, actually. And, you know, we had a pretty good time here in rural California. And Christian Einfeld's been filming the event, and, you know, filming us, you know, following us around with his camera while we go around Felton and talk to people and things along those lines. And I don't know if it's up yet, but it might be. If you go to digitaltippingpoint.org, he's got some, I guess, some raw footage of us, so you can see what Ken and I both look like, and try not to laugh too hard. I think it's kind of a Laurel and Hardy act, so and you'll see who's who. And generally, you know, it is fun, and it's pretty satisfying to see when you show somebody the things that we already know about FOSS and about GNU Linux, and when you see, you know, when they realize that, you know, there's another way, it's kind of satisfying.
That would be digitaltippingpoint.com, right?
Okay, I stand corrected. if somebody's going there, they can tell me if anything's up yet, because I was told this afternoon that it was. Ken and I took the grand tour of the Silicon Valley on his way up to the airport this morning. You know, just on Google, Yahoo, and things like that. So.
There is something up there, a featured video. Digital Tipping Point feature video. And it says, watch Microsoft users enjoying Vista. No, I'm just kidding.
Wait, that's not it. Maybe it's the other digital.
No, I'm just kidding. It is a feature video. It doesn't. Microsoft lusts after free open source software companies. I'm not playing the video because if I play it.
That sounds like a porn site. Let me see if I can call one up here because.
I believe it. I'm at the right place, yeah. But.
It sounds like you when I hit play, so it's probably you.
Oh, well, it could be. Well, this is somebody who sounds a lot like me, you know, poor guy. But, my computer is not awakening from slumber as fast as it should. But in any case, yeah, some of the things, you know, we had a great load of help from what I call gurus and graybeards, you know, people with a lot of experience in Linux and FOSS programs, a couple of college professors from Evergreen Valley College over in San Jose and Rio College, which is here in Aptos, you know, several people from just sort of LUG communities at Cabrillo College and the Silicon Valley, an open office representative was there. He got people going on both Mac and Windows machines. You know, there's a couple of what's interesting, and I didn't realize this, is that most distros come with open office, and Fedora doesn't, or at least I think maybe the later ones, like Fedora 8 or 9. So, you know, we had copies of that to give to folks who might have needed it. And it's been, you know, on the whole, it's been a pretty good project, and it's far exceeded my expectations.
That's great. I've really enjoy reading Ken's blog and keeping up to date as to what's going on. It sounds like an exciting time, a lot of fun. Sounds like there, you know, when talking with you, there seems to be a significant interest. And, you know, the pictures that he has posted, not only of the event, but the surrounding area is beautiful over there.
Oh, yeah, it's very nice. It's right at the base of the mountains on the west side of Santa Cruz Mountain. And you go over those mountains, and it's Silicon Valley, and it's kind of like night and day because, you know, when you go over, it's like, you know, completely urban. And, you know, you come over the hill, and it's kind of rural until you get to the ocean. And, you know, Santa Cruz being a college town that has about 50,000 people. But it's pretty nice up here. It's a little hot today, but hot and dry, which means the fire departments are all kind of on tenterhook. But pretty nice nonetheless.
Larry, I was going to talk to these guys about it. I was thinking of something, how we could help you guys out besides donating some cash. I don't know what the other guys might think of this, but I was thinking maybe we could have an episode in the next couple of weeks where some of the people that have converted to Linux, if they have problems or issues, maybe they can call into the show, and we could do a help episode just for them, just for people from Felton.
Oh, if you did that, that'd be great. I'd love to be able to, have them call. That would be,
In fact, we can even call them if they'd like.
Okay, and call them up. Hey, having any problems? I think that's actually an excellent idea. And I also would like to, maybe have some folks. You know, maybe you can talk to them or do an interview, perhaps about their experience with Linux for, you know, maybe a week or two and see how they're doing and stuff like that. One of the things that Christian Einfeld is doing is essentially documenting, you know, people's conversions and things like that. So, and he goes into very great detail. You'll see when we can find the digital video. And, you know, he's probably there sitting at home right now listening to this and, you know, converting it as we speak, so because I know he's a listener, and you know, have folks on, that would be actually that would probably make for a good show, I think. Yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah,
I think a call-in episode would be great, like a tech support show.
Yeah,
you know, between the four of us, I think we could help a few people out.
Right. Yeah, and you know, we've gotten a lot of help from OpenOffice, you know, came, and they were the guy that was here was just did a great job of answering people's questions about, you know, how OpenOffice stacks up against, you know, Microsoft Office, and we all know how that stacks up, but relating that to the public was actually pretty good. We had a program called CodeWeavers, which allows, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that one.
Sure, it's basically the commercial version of Wine. You can purchase
exactly.
A subscription,
and you can get a more up-to-date. They donated like, you know, versions of their software to those who were converting. Bear with me here because I can't say enough for the guys who actually, or the distros who actually, you know, stepped up to the plate, and that would be like Mandriva and Fedora and Ubuntu finally. And I say finally because it was kind of, you know, as much as I may like the distro, one hand really didn't know what the other hand was doing, and finally at the last minute the California loco stepped in and said, you know, we got it, and they did, so. And they came in with you know, some pretty knowledgeable guys and support, and you know, we had a couple of distros that that supported us, although they didn't send anybody, and they're not really the most I guess maybe newbie friendly distros, but they supported us anyway, and that was Wolvik, which is Slackware based, as you probably know, and Antiques, Memphis, which runs really well on old machines. In fact, I had a 128 megabyte old IBM box running it, just to show people, you know, what, how low can you go, essentially, on that. So, but I mean, it's something I think I would let, you know, somebody who's like brand new to Linux, you know, install and try, unless they were really brave or something. So.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
And, well, thank you, thank you. And again, we have another week of probably two more meetings next week. I haven't really. I'm kind of up in the air with the Presbyterian Church hall, which has turned out to be a really good. You know, it's a really huge hall, and we're able to get a lot of people in there. It's Tuesday or Wednesday, but Saturday, the 26th, is actually a go, so we'll be there. And one of the things, if people have been paying attention to this and they're listening, I'm really sorry if we haven't gotten the connectivity down to an exact science. And those people who are paying attention to that know, because we've been trying to do like a constant IRC, you know, presence and telling people what's been going on, and a constant like web presence to tell people what's been going on. And that just, I mean, if there has been something that's been lacking, it's been that. And we've kind of fallen flat on that. So.
Well, you got a lot going on.
Yeah. But by the same token, we were kind of planning. We had originally planned to have some, you know, video feed, and that just wasn't possible. And we're sort of dependent on the church's wireless for connectivity, and that was kind of flaky on Sunday. Tuesday wasn't so bad, but Sunday was just, you know, out to lunch. So, but anyhow, but yeah, if anybody's, you know, kind of feels slighted that we didn't, you know, put on a big production or anything like that, you know, sorry.
Awesome. But you know what? You do what you can, and you're doing a fantastic job.
And again, you know, I did mention like someone in Portland wanting to do this, and a couple of folks in Europe, actually, one in Italy and one in Germany, also mentioned that, yeah, hey, this is a good idea. I think we should try this here. And it's like, yes, absolutely. And Ken and I are actually working on a manual and like a how-to do this, and taking the good stuff and the bad stuff. One of the things that we were kind of saying last night was like, you know, Tuesday night may not be the best night for this thing, sort of thing, because it might be, I don't know, ravioli night somewhere or something, or I don't know why we didn't get, well, we didn't get throws of people like we did on Sunday on Tuesday, but maybe that's to be expected, so perhaps that's, you know, something that goes in the manual, you know.
Well, you still have a few days left of this, right?
Yeah, yeah. And
so
again,
what is it? Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want to know, what is it that, you know, we as the Linux community, the people that are listening to this show, can still do to help you out? Is there anything else you guys need? What extra support do you need for those people who are, you know, able to do so? What can we help out with?
Well, okay. You know, we're always going to need, you know, people who, we're going to set up, like, forums and IRC channels by, you know, lindependence-mandrivel-lindependence-fedora-lindependence-ubuntu. And we're trying to, you know, everyone who came and went home with Linux got sort of an introduction into some of the things that we take for granted, like IRC channels or things like that. And, you know, most of them had heard of them or knew what they were and said, oh, yeah, those look like those bulletin board things, you know. And so it's one of the things is that we could use people to, you know, to sort of be on call to kind of help with a little bit of hand-holding, despite the fact we do have volunteers here already to do that. And again, it's, and we don't need people, you know, again, when we talk to the graybeards and gurus and have them help out, we have one strict rule, and that's the phrase RTFM is not in our vocabulary because you want to get these people used to it first, and then you can suggest that, well, okay, you can find that information here and so on and so forth, but in a lot of cases you get guys who and gals who just just read the manual and that's kind of not what we're into. That's like our only hard and fast rule is that we want people to at least let the folks find out for themselves where to find the information, and instead of just telling them bluntly to crack open a book. So and basically, let me see, if we're actually doing okay money wise I mean, we're not doing great. We can always use donations, but that's not really our focus now. We are kind of looking at just getting other ones rolling. So if you were going to donate, I mean, those of you who might be listening who might want to donate, I may ask you to wait, or maybe wait for the next one to come along, which will be probably up in Portland. So to get him going, and that's about it really. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. And of course, now Ken would probably have a whole list, a laundry list of things that he can think of right off the bat. So, yeah.
Hey, do you know the name of the guy who came down from Portland?
Well, he didn't come down from Portland, actually. We just got an email from him yesterday.
Oh.
And he actually used to, what happened was he's from Felton, and he lives in Portland now, and he said, "Well, hey, I just read about this thing happening in Felton, and I used to live there in Linux years ago, and I can't get anybody to there's no Linux group here, and I want to get one started, and I'd like to do what you're doing." So, Ken and I looked at each other and said, like, "Well, this is part of what we were planning here, was hopefully to get other people to do this." And that's another thing, I guess. I mean, if people are still inspired or have a desire to do this, this is kind of open source, actually. We can give you the plan, and you can it's under the GPL, and you can tweak it as much as you want, as long as you release it under the GPL and go from there. So, we'd like to hope that this is just the start, and we have other communities who get involved and go forward. So,
I tell you what, it sounds to me like so far, even though you haven't actually been doing it very long, that it's a wild success already. I mean, you're talking over 100 people that you've helped already, right?
Well, again, yeah, about 150 people probably left. Well, 150 people left at least with a disc and information. One guy came in last night and said he was there Sunday. The reason was here. They're a Berkeley outfit that makes Linux boxes. He came back Tuesday looking for the reason to go to buy a box, and what we did is, somebody got Earl Malmrose on the phone, who runs Earl and Kathy run that up there in Berkeley, and got him set up because he was talking on the phone with them for a while. So, I can't impress I can't explain how. Beyond successful, I think that is that when people actually come in and just say, get Windows off my machine, and and we walk them through, some of the benefits of Linux without, having to, be the car salesman saying, what do I need to do to get you into a Linux, it's just beyond, it's just pleasing to no end.
That is awesome. Awesome, awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of mind-boggling.
Well, Larry, I want to thank you for coming on and give us the update. Not well, kicking thanks. You off. You're more than okay. welcome to stay long as long as you want.
I can stick around.
But, Link?
Yes, sir?
What was it you wanted to say?
I said what I wanted to say.
Whose fan just went on?
That was me.
That's probably Alan.
Hey, I'm sorry. It was 85 in this room today, so...
Alan turning on the...
Yeah, it was a hot day today, man.
The jet engine, huh?
I put the air conditioner on at 4:30 or 4 to 5 when I got home on, and it was running on high until just before the show started, so before it actually shut down. That was with the door closed. So it only has to do the one room, but sorry, it's summer now, so you may find the jet engine is on in the background. It's actually on very low right now.
You really don't hear Dan's jet engine anymore, the compact server?
Because Dan's got it rocking the right way.
What, do you got it in your kids' rooms? Let them listen
to
that.
No, it's still right here. I just have my microphone on the other side of the room.
Ah, wised up finally.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have no way of turning the microphone around in here. The air conditioner's behind me, and that's the only way I can actually sit, so I can't null it out.
Man, you've got more excuses than an episode of a lot of Linux Links.
Sorry.
Holy mackerel.
Somebody's got to cause trouble here. It might as well be me.
Hey, I got X-Fame working on Nokia, man. It's awesome. All the games work. The only game that I had problems with was Paperboy. But all the other ones, man, they all work fine. Some games, the controls are a little easier than others. You know, like Ms. Pac-Man is pretty easy, straightforward. I was playing that. I was playing Defender, Centipede, a few
cool.
others. Yeah, it's good. Old school games, man. They rock. Asteroids, Galaxian.
I was doing that on the Triple E last night, and I wanted to get one of the Nintendo emulators working. Because there's this old game I do have it, called Blaster Master, that I have just never gotten around the finishing, and I don't have a Nintendo Entertainment System anymore, and I wanted to play it. And the only one I could find that would actually play it was Tux NES. Like, ZS NES would not play it. Tux NES was the only one. ZS NES kept coming back saying that it was a corrupted ROM file. Maybe I'm doing something wrong with ZS NES. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Pat.
Oh, that's okay. I don't have any of those ROMs. I'd like to check them out, possibly.
You know, something that somebody brought to Independence on Sunday. Not one of the townsfolk. Well, actually, he lives there, but he's actually one of the geeks. One of the town geeks is. I think it was a Nintendo DS running something called DS Linux.
Yes.
Okay, so somebody's familiar with that.
Yes, I haven't tried it out yet, but I'm aware of it.
I've never seen it before, and it was actually pretty bizarre, and it kind of contributed to the wow factor that people were kind of, some people were going, hey, what's that? It's, you know, well, it looks like a game thing, but it's actually, you know, it's like the kid's PDA. He's a kid, he's like 20, which is a kid to me, but that's kind of interesting, yeah. Yeah, little vignettes like that going on during the course of the day on Sunday. Not so much last night, but...
Yeah, I haven't actually tried it out yet. It's been something I've been meaning to. You need some specialized hardware, which is not that expensive. A simple flash card reader runs anywhere from 20 to 20 bucks on up. And if you want more information on those, go look it up on Games and More Entertainment Radio. C4 did a fantastic review of all that.
You were doing MAME in what? The GP2X when you were using
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I have MAME.
Do you use that, by the way?
I use it every day. I use it for listening to the podcast. Yes, I do.
So for you, I guess the Nokia would be kind of redundant to get because you already have the GP2X.
Yeah, you know what? I love my GP2X. The I think the microphone, or not the microphone, the headphone jack is starting to go. I've had it for like a good 3 years, and it's something I've used every day. I take it running with me. I thought about getting an iAudio just because of that. I've considered the Nokia N800. The only problem is between, you know, it's a little bit bigger than something I could take running with me, I think, or I'd want to take running with me, because there's been a couple of times I've rolled it running and, you know, my GP2X has dug itself into the dirt or slid across the concrete, and I wouldn't want to have that happen with the N800. But then, you know, it's like, what do I use, the N800 or the Triple EPC? It's a tough call, you know? If I'm going to use something for web browsing near an access point, I'm probably going to be playing around with my Triple EPC. It's a hard choice, but the N800 or any of the N-series looks awesome. Unfortunately, I don't have the disposable income like Alan does to just buy anything and everything.
Sorry. I just bought a new HT over the weekend, so.
Shut up.
What'd you get?
VX7R.
What is it, Vizio?
No, it's a ham radio HT.
Oh, okay.
I haven't bought myself a new radio in about 10 years, so I figured it was time.
Do you actually talk on it, Alan?
Every once in a while. I'm
and
not
who do you
real,
talk
real
to?
Act. Whoever answers. It's all local stuff. It's all VHF, so.
He talks to all the hot men.
Now, if you ever been to an amateur radio ham fest, so that's the last thing you're going to see there.
That's more of a sausage fest than the Linux stuff is.
Dude, I am a thin person compared to some of them people.
I got 19 minutes left on my laptop battery.
You better plug it in.
I can't, because then I'll get feedback. I do have to play.
Oh, you're rubbing the show off of that
good
laptop.
Good thing there's only 5 minutes left of the show, then, huh?
Before
good
we
thing
go,
I'm running a backup recording.
Before we go, God, Trolls wants to just pop on and say something. But you know, damn it,
here we go.
I wanted to make some points, but I'll save them for the next show. There was an awful article I read. Well, not too awful. It pissed me off. If you saw it, you know, you can gear up for it next week. It's on Australian PC Magazine. Wow, what the heck?
That wasn't me.
Wasn't me either.
Linux not essential to EEE PC success was the article. You can find it, and I'll post it in the chat, and you can all read it for next week, and I will make my comments.
We'll check it out and see.
Yeah,
what,
we can,
you know,
we can discuss it next week and some points I wanted to make about it. Is this you, Trolls?
Yes, it is.
All right, well, you go ahead and you have at it. You let him have it. Because I'm sick of his attitude, too. Who are you attacking?
Go attack me.
Before I say anything, I just wanted to make a few remarks. One thing, you remember back on the episode when Chess and I was on? I think at the end I mentioned two shows that everyone should go listen to. I got something wrong there. It's not episode 103 people should listen to. It's episode 93 for Dan's shitting in a bag story. That's just wanted to make it clear. And also, in the context of Randall Swartz, since you had him on the show tonight, I made some comments on the forum that I just wanted to apologize for. It was completely unjustified, so just wanted to get that out of the way. Okay. Pat, I don't want to yell at you for this, because I don't believe in yelling at anyone.
Please, go ahead.
Except Narcissus, of course. But on this show, during the conversation with Randall, and also some former shows, when you have referred to proprietary software, you have said commercial software, and that characterization I reject too.
Yes, I know the difference between proprietary and commercial. Red Hot, it's free software and it's commercial software.
Yeah, the reason I object to this characterization, difficult word, is because Red Hat costs like $2,500. If that's not commercial, I think the dictionary is wrong. And I use an English dictionary when I speak English. So,
Charles, you speak English better than I do.
Thanks for that comment. But it's just something I think is important because Sugar CRM, GPL software, isn't a commercial. Of course it is.
Yeah, I totally understand. I mean, we were talking about Annie Anakos, you know, his disparaging remarks, you know, comparing commercial software versus open source software. Yeah, there is commercial software that is free software. Yeah, absolutely.
And to be honest, you know, Mike, this comment is actually more focused towards him than you because you know the difference. You just, you know, make it like, because you're just used to saying something and you just say that, even though you know something is maybe more correct to say. For example, I had an argument with Alex on Jeopardy, I think yesterday, where I said that China's government was fascist, and he said something else, and some argument back and forth, even though I could have probably used a more specific characterization. Also, I just have something funny I wanted to mention. A few days ago, I felt the urge to rebuild an OpenBSD server of mine, and during that I had to reconfigure the IRC daemon I run, and when I asked Dan about a year ago, I think, about what IRC daemon I should use, he said he used IRC hybrid, and I know I went with that and been relatively happy with it. It worked, but when I had to reconfigure it, I had some problems with it, and it just pissed me off in the end, so I went looking for another daemon. And in ShopRat Honor, I picked IRCD's Ratbox, and that enabled me to go totally anti Dan in terms of security, because you know that Dan employs really high security on his servers, right? So I did things like change rooted the made sure that the daemon ran in change root, because you know I have the password for this asterisk box, and it's definitely really high security. Sarcasm. And I have one last thing, and this is just something I think I discussed it with you once, Pat, but that's a long time ago. And Ken Fallon also sort of hinted at it as a joke. But how come a few times on the show, it's not very often, maybe once or twice, maybe three times, I've heard you sort of make a negative comment, connotation towards socialists, because I take a little bit of offense to that, because I'm a socialist, and I probably believe stronger in democracy than some conservatives here in Denmark that I know. Because if you speak today, socialism is an umbrella term. It's not one specific thing, just like, let's say, Christianity is. Lots of things. It's Prostepa, it's Lutheranism, it's Catholicism, it's many things. That's just one thing.
Or Linux, for that matter.
No idea.
Oh, I think you can't classify Linux user into, you know, any political group or any ethnic group.
Well, that
I know. It spreads together, you know, it's widespread. There's people from all over. All people have different opinions, all people have different backgrounds.
And if I can interrupt, one of the points that Christian made in making a film about Ken and me, you know, doing this project together is that he's a rock-ribbed conservative as they come, and I'm probably as left as you can get without falling off the edge, so.
Exactly. I'm a conservative, you know, but I can deal with liberal guys because we agree, you know, on Linux, and it's a great thing. And it unites people, you know.
Right, exactly, and that's one of the points that Christian is making with part of that segment of the film, because we go back and forth. He'll say conservative, liberal. I'll say tree hugger, and he'll say, you know, mow them down, and you know, and we go down the line like that. So, but we're still united in you know, promoting FOSS and promoting promoting Linux, so, or GNU Linux, depending on which one you want to use. I use that one. Ken just
all the world united under the flag of the penguin.
Exactly.
Nice. Link, have you seen the red flag's logo of Tux?
Oh, the red flag Linux?
Yeah, the logo for that was Tux.
Well, that's from China, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Well, Tux is like waving.
Well, there you go.
I thought that was funny.
Well, speaking of Tux.
And Pat, I guess you can deal with socialists too. Because I'm a socialist, I'm actually wearing a red t-shirt right now.
Hey, listen, man, I have socialists in my family. You know, they're nice people. I don't agree with them politically, but that's besides the fact. We can agree on certain things.
Well, if they agree with democracy, I guess you can agree with them on that. So.
Exactly.
Actually, he has one.
Get rid of the UN flag, put up the penguin flag.
There you go.
Well, actually, one thing I will say, I actually think anybody who's against democracy is also a hypocrite if he calls himself or herself a socialist. FARC in Colombia being an example of that. I blogged about that and got rich that for doing that, but what the heck.
We diverge.
Exactly.
Anyhow, it's getting near that time. Dan, do you have a song to play us out?
Yeah.
Oh, no, don't let Ben pick me.
Hopefully some better than some of you.
No, don't let me pick them.
Of late.
Yeah, Alan, too.
Is that what it is? No.
When Alan selects a song, we get hate mail from ministers and reverends.
It was merely a mistake.
They're okay with the F-bombs if the music selection.
I was going to say, yeah. How many times we drop the F-bomb during a show, but yet I get killed on the music?
Hey, music's important to a lot of people, man.
I just thought that was a funny song myself.
Alan, if you pick something by some certain songs by Janet Jackson, you'd get an email from both those haters. You no more get an email from, and also from the RIAA.
Well, no, it wasn't that. It was it came from a cartoon, actually. So
the cartoon.
It was up on YouTube.
The Japanese cartoon.
No. One of the comics I read is oh crap! I can't even remember what the hell I got it from now because I read so many of them. But it's a comic strip that I read that the guy put together his little YouTube video of his obnoxious main character on it. I thought it was funny. Yeah, I just think obviously everyone else didn't, but that just shows keep me away from music selections.
Yeah, same here actually.
I used to buy albums on just by what they were actually. I'm dating myself by saying albums, but by what the covers looked like, as opposed to what the band actually was. And you'd stand like a good chance of getting crap, but you got really interesting album covers.
Yeah, those were the days.
Of course, buying them while I was wasted probably didn't help a whole lot either. But that was the best time to go. That was the best time to go looking through the record store, though.
Yeah, okay. Hey, you must have every Yes album then.
I had a lot of those, yeah.
I'm a big Yes fan.
Hey, even though I'm only 19, I still remember buying albums and getting crap, so, you know.
Actually, I'm slowly converting my albums back to digital. When I find the ones that are good enough to play, because actually I ruined a lot of albums not having real good stereo equipment when I was younger. So most of them, I mean, you play and it's nothing but pops and dropouts
and using the records as frisbees and coasters had nothing to do with that.
No, we never used the records like that. But you know, remember, I'm old enough that like you put on more than one record and they would drop on top of one another. So dating myself even more. All right, Dan, what are we playing tonight?
All right, well, we're going to play some songs and then some other stuff, and then we're out of here. So, thank you for listening, everybody. Let me play this stuff my laptop
can plug everyone.
Back in. This is A Crack in the Surfboard by Uma Florestra.
off of PodSafe Audio. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Yeah.
Hi, this is Leo, and if I want to know what's happening in Linux, hey, I'm going to listen to the Linux Link Tech Show. Hi, this is Leo Laporte. Whenever I'm on the Internet, I listen to the Linux Link Tech Show. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and you're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? With my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up. It's over.
Gee, haven't heard those ones in a long time.
Oh, man, you know what? This is bumming me out. I was just looking over at iAudio because, you know, I thought maybe I'll see about picking up one of their players like my wife has. And they don't sell them anymore. The U3s?
Yeah, they don't.
And I would love
the big
to
ones is the iAudio 7 and the D2.
I don't want those. That stinks. Now, you know, I don't know of any other AUG device like that that plays AUG.
No,
there's other ones that play AUG. There's other players out there.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Al.
Y'all later.
You know what? If you out there have, you know of a player that's kind of like the iAudio U3, flash-based device, it's, you know, small. I don't want to, like, I don't want to watch movies on. I just want to play AUG files.
You want my old iAudio?
How much you want for it?
I don't know, $20.
Dude, I will give you $20 for it.
Okay, I'll send it to you.
I will send you. Do you want me to PayPal you $20? You know what? I don't want to PayPal you $20 because then they take a cut out of it. I'm going to send you $20 in cash. How's that sound?
Nah, write a check, Dan.
I will send you a check of $20. I will do that.
Okay, I'll send it down
right
to you.
And plus shipping and handling.
Whatever.
Whatever that'll be. I appreciate it. Thank you. All my love to you and everybody else out there and trolls too and you, Mr. Link, President, iRiver. I already had an iRiver, Dave Yates. I'm kind of concerned about how well iRiver.
We don't need to go down that road
yeah.
Again.
Yeah. I know what I'm saying. But
you remember that? I remember when you guys all ran out on iRivers.
Yeah.
It was so high on the iRiver when it first came out, and it wouldn't play any low-quality OGs. It was only, like, really high bit rates, right?
Oh, yeah, that was awful. Yeah.
And which is weird because a lot of the audio players that play OGs, it's the other way around. They handle the low bit rate stuff fine. It's just the high bit rate stuff they have problems with.
Yeah, I remember that. Remember when my button broke on it and I disassembled mine to try and solder it back?
He could get it back together again.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate it, Pat. I will send you the money and
no problem. I'll send that out to you.
We didn't have a crash this week, so here we go.
All righty.
Well, everybody, have a happy day.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, guys.
Good night. Good night, Larry.
Good night, Larry.
And Link, is Link still there? Jerk. All right, good night, Pat, Larry, everybody. Bye.
Bye.